I love it when people travel with purpose, especially when getting out of your everyday comfort zone pays off in ways you couldn't have imagined. Filmmaker Dan Austin's life is a good example. He chronicles a life-changing bike trip across the U.S. in his book and documentary called True Fans, and he's since written a fun little guide to traveling close to the Earth. It's called The Road Trip Pilgrim's Guide. RoadTripPilgrim.com tells more about it. Dan's now leading a nonprofit called the 88 Bikes Foundation, which brings joy and bicycles to young people in the developing world. Details on that are at 88bikes.org. Dan Austin joins us today, and he has a fascinating story. And Dan, rather than me explain it all, tell us, just in a brief overview, where your travels started and where they led you.
Sure. So a few years ago, my brother and best friend and I biked across America. We wanted to do it right. We wanted to really see our country and get to know it. We went on mountain bikes. We towed everything we had in the Ark of the Covenant, this bike trailer we pulled behind our bikes. We didn't shower for weeks. We camped on golf courses, the tops of mountains. We had a great time and got to the Basketball Hall of Fame at the end of the journey. That was kind of the beginning of this meaningful travel, this idea of going on pilgrimages, or what I call in my second book, the road trip pilgrimage, which kind of has sort of a dirtbag sort of mentality to it, I guess, as well.
And then that led you to an organization that you've started?
Yeah. So we were going to do a bike ride through Cambodia several years after that, actually 10 years after we biked across America. And we wanted to give our bikes away at the end of the ride to two lucky kids. This was in Cambodia. And we found an orphanage in Phnom Penh, but we realized 2 weeks before we left that there were 88 kids at the orphanage, which meant that two kids would have a great day and 86 kids would have kind of a lousy day, and we didn't want that to happen. So we launched a fundraiser, and within just 4 days, we had all the money we needed to buy bikes for all of the kids. And we went to Cambodia. The kids got the bikes. It was this incredible, what we call, moment of happy. And my brother and I realized right then that we wanted to do this for years
to come. Wow. What a cool, inspirational story. Now, first of all, the bike trip that you took that sort of kicked off this amazing sort of passion you have now, it was from West Coast to East Coast?
Yeah. We started off in Venice Beach,
right,
in Los Angeles, over the top of San Bernardino Mountains, across the Mojave, Rockies, and ended up D.C. up the coast to Boston.
And what was your budget per day for that trip?
$10 a day.
$10 a day.
That's about what we had, yeah.
Wow. I've got this book I'm holding of yours, The Road Trip Pilgrim's Guide. And at the end of the book, sort of in the appendix or something, you've got this Oath of the Road Trip Pilgrim, and it's got little blanks you fill in. So I filled this in, and I'm going to read it. I'm going to read it now, and this is sort of my oath here. I, Rick Steves, am going to ignore anything that gets in the way of taking that epic pilgrimage I've been meaning to take across Russia on the Trans-Siberian Railway.
That's right. Nice.
I'm going to put aside my need for good coffee and the internet for 2 weeks. So I got to fill that in, how long I'm going to go, what I'm going to do without, and get going. I'm not going to be discouraged by the ego traveler. In fact, my pilgrimage has never been done before because I am doing it. So even though I may walk a path worn by thousands, it'll be a wholly unique and epic quest. By turning the page, I take the oath to make this thing happen, to never compare, and to have the time of my life. I, Rick Steves, take the oath and become the road trip pilgrim. It's a declaration. It's an empowerment.
Yeah. I think travel at its best is when you go because you really want to, because there's something about that particular journey that cues into who you are and to seeking a greater sense for your own identity. And like it says in the oath there, you know, it could be a path trod by thousands. It could be a...
But it's the first time it's ever been done because...
Exactly.
It's me and I'm unique.
And that was great, by the way. That was a very nice utilization of the oath. I love that.
Well,
that's fantastic.
This is not just a radio interview here. This is something I'm taking to heart. I think this is very cool. I'm not going to be discouraged by the ego traveler. What is that line supposed to mean?
Well, I think that, you know, there's a temptation sometimes in travel to want to just hit as many possible places as you can, checklist. And, you know, we all want to see everything, right? Because it's all interesting. But I think that you can get distracted by having a deeper sense of travel and self if you just checklist it instead of just spending a little time and going because you want to and embracing wherever you are and whatever you find and seeing like the essence of that.
Great travel writers from Robert Louis Stevenson to Carl Franz have said that sort of philosophical thing. Wherever you go, there you are.
Exactly. When we finally got to the East Coast, you know, it was wonderful to hit the Atlantic Ocean, but it was really all those adventures that came in between that made the journey.
It's pretty rough living. I mean, $10 a day, this is serious stuff. And I really think there's an interesting psychological barrier or some kind of barrier put between you and the experience you envision if you have too much money.
I completely agree. And, you know, if we were to do this now, we'd probably have a few more resources. You know, we'd probably have a hotel here and there. But when you are forced to, you know, to camp out, to really embrace the communities you're in, something happens, you know, and it was this way when I biked through Mexico. I biked down the Gulf Coast of Mexico as well. And you know, something magical happens when you don't have a lot of resources, when you just embrace the journey. People connect with you in a different way. You're equal to them. There's not this, you know, this inequality. And I don't know, something about just going with limited resources was probably the best thing about that trip.
You know, one thing good about going with limited resources is you meet the crazies.
For sure.
You meet the crazies and you also meet sort of guru people that you can learn from.
Well, you know, you meet the full spectrum of humanity. You kind of bring out the guru, the crazy, the true fan, the hero in everybody. It's like something about that approach strips off the layers so that, you know, everyone becomes a little more true, a little more of their true essence, you know?
Do you talk to people that a lot of other people would sort of cross the road not to talk to?
Well, I think they often come and talk to us.
So you become a crazy yourself.
Probably so.
Part of the family. Well, when you haven't taken a shower for 2 weeks or a bath for 2 weeks.
Well, I remember I was on my first, you know, longer bike trip across Colorado back when I was just out of high school. And there was a guy who'd obviously been traveling for a lot. And I was riding my bike out of town and he was sitting by the roadside. And we kind of exchanged this glance. And it was like, you know, the glance of the wanderer. And that was the first time I realized that when you're on the road like that, you're kind of just embracing the elements, whatever else. You have this bond with those folks.
It's the great equalizer. Being on the road with no money. And, you know, it's the same thing when you think of the famous pilgrimage, probably the ultimate most famous pilgrimage, the Camino de Santiago. Mm. There's two kinds of pilgrims. There's pilgrims that are really in the elements, and there's pilgrims that, you know, have somebody to carry their bags and stay in nice hotels.
Exactly. And that's a perfect example of, you know, what we brought up earlier, the idea of, I mean, there is a path that's been worn by, you know, millions, and yet your journey is the first one if you were to do it.
This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking with Dan Austin. And Dan wrote a book called True Fans about his bike ride across the United States from California to the Basketball Hall of Fame in where?
Springfield, Mass. That was the destination.
Massachusetts. Yeah. So the whole country. Wrote a book called True Fans and your book, The Road Trip Pilgrim's Guide. It's really a guidebook. You know, you read through this book and you realize, okay, packing. If you're a pilgrim, you got all of your stuff on your back generally. You want to pack light, but there's certain things that you do want to bring along because you're a pilgrim. Talk about books that you would read on the road.
Oh, man. Well, you know, the books that we read going across America remain, you know, stenciled into us as part of that journey. I remember finishing Desert Solitaire by Edward Abbey on a pit toilet beside the San Miguel River in Colorado. I remember that day distinctly and coming out of that going, dang, that was a good book.
Because where you read a great book really has an impact on how great the book is.
Well, we just crossed the desert, you know, Abbey's country. And, you know, we just crossed into Colorado and, you know, coming out and seeing the stars and my friends are at the picnic table with the camp stove. And something about that image, having nothing to do with the pit toilet, but, you know, I mean, you have time to read. So.
Yeah.
And I remember that distinctly. And of course, my friend Clint read Huck Finn. How could you bike across the plains and cross the Mississippi River and not read something from Twain?
Kerouac?
Definitely On the Road. We read On the Road when we were there. Absolutely. Dharma Bums. Yeah.
Read it on the road. Read it with a stubble. Read it after having eaten some sludge. Tell us about cuisine. High cuisine on the road. What's sludge?
Well, when you're broke, you know, you improvise. You know, our trusty camp stove fired up a couple times a day at least, and we made this sludge concoction. Pasta packets, Lipton noodle soup, anything we could find, potatoes, cabbage. We tossed a whole cabbage in one time, just the whole thing and let it stew. And then you kind of mix it around, it congeals, the water boils off, and you have this sludgy pasta mix. It's great, high on carbs, powers you down the road the next day. In the morning, it's congealed together, what we call sludge cake. You slice it into chunks, and you eat it, and you're on your way. It's like the first power bar.
You eat it cold, or you heat it up?
No, we ate it cold.
You ate it cold?
We had to save gas. We had a budget.
Well, that is very hardcore. And you even talk about getting free food from, like, leftovers from restaurants and stuff. What are some tips on just, if you're on the road and you don't have any money, where will you find some free food?
Well, the great thing about it is that, you know, folks want to encourage your journey. You know, they see you rolling on your bikes.
They're probably envious a little bit.
Oh, I think so. I think that maybe envious, but also hopefully inspired, you know?
I'm envious and inspired by my kids were slumming around South America like I did when I was a teenager. And I think back on my Europe through the gutter trip, you know, and I wouldn't do it now because, I don't know, I'm just more careful and I need a few more comforts. But we can still do it. I mean, people of all ages and all budgets can still have what you're talking about, becoming a road pilgrim.
Certainly. And you don't have to go on a budget of 10 bucks a day. You can stay in nice little guest houses. I think the whole thing is, though, to seek for that authenticity, to seek for the connection with people, and, yeah, to maybe push the comfort zone a little bit, camp out once in a while, ride your bike.
Okay, talk then about not bathing.
You get used to it.
For me, I got to wash my hair every morning or it's just a weird day. And I went for 3 or 4 days in Europe without washing my hair. It was actually kind of a cool experience. You went like 2 weeks or something, you said.
We did like 3.5 going across America.
3.5 weeks?
Yeah, yeah.
And you're not just like sitting around in a library reading. You're biking and sweating.
Oh, yeah.
You got grimy in 3.5 weeks.
We did. But, you know, the great thing about being on the road is that every lake, river, stream, hot spring, swimming hole, we were in. You know, so, I mean, okay, we didn't shower for 3.5 weeks.
Oh, okay, but you were jumping in
lakes.
Oh,
absolutely.
Oh, good.
Absolutely.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, yeah.
We were on a bus once from Istanbul to Tehran. It's like a 4-day bus ride. And the bus driver was like our mother, and he would stop in the middle of nowhere and say, "Everybody into the river." And I just can't imagine that on a bus in the United States. But it's kind of nice just to be in the elements when you want to jump in and get clean.
I think it's a huge part of the travel. Absolutely.
Talk about camping free. You're biking across the United
States.
$10 a day, you'd rather spend it on food than a roof over your head.
Yeah. I mean, as you well know, lodging tends to be the biggest expense for any traveler. If you can eliminate that expense, you suddenly have, you know, greatly amplified your budget.
Right.
So, you know, town parks are great. Small towns are fascinated by somebody rolling through on their bike. They'll love you. One morning we were in Nebraska, big storm hit. The next morning, this guy walked across the street with coffee for us. Said, "Well, I just wanted to see if the storm didn't kill you."
You know, you're right. In a small town, I mean, you guys are, you're not thugs. You're obviously, idealistic people out there biking around, and you're not dangerous. You don't threaten people. So you can just throw out your sleeping bag in a park.
Absolutely. We were only kicked out of one park going across America where the cop or, you know, whoever did not give us another option. Only one time. And then we were taken in there was a church just down the street.
So you can sleep in churches?
Sleep at churches. That's great. That happened many, many times. They'll take great care of you. Any denomination. There's a little list in the book of the...
Are denominations different? I mean, let's say you're coming into town and there's a Catholic church and a Methodist church and a Lutheran church. You just take anyone, or do you
probably go with the Methodist?
Go with the Methodist, yeah.
Lutheran would be okay. Catholic, yeah, I'd be okay too, but probably not quite. I mean, look, I'm just talking from experience. Probably not quite as accommodating, but I'd go with the Methodist, yeah.
You just find a nice guy and tell him you're in a jam. Is there any way I can crash here?
Yeah, or unless it's late, you just throw out the bags, you know, and they'll find you in the morning.
I've done that in Greece, and it works very nicely.
Absolutely.
I mean, the door's open and small town. Golf courses?
Golf courses are very comfortable. You got to get in after it's dark. You don't want to get kicked off the golf course. And the sprinklers can be tough.
Oh, what a rude awakening. Because they probably run the sprinklers before the first tee time.
Right. So what you have to do is find the sprinklers beforehand. Make sure you kind of secure the campsite. Yeah. It's a couple little diagrams in the book on how to do that.
Right. Yeah.
Sometimes the sprinklers are, you know, below the surface, which makes it difficult.
Oh, is that what that diagram is? You're overriding the sprinkler for your zone?
Well, you can use bungee cords to kind of like wrap them up so they shoot off in one direction.
That's actually stopping the sprinkler from getting you wet.
That's correct, yeah. You know, the worst ones are what we call these robo heads, which are, you know, below the surface and they pop up. The sludge pot works great. We pop it down at the top. We strap it down with bungee cords with stakes.
So you saw that dangerous sprinkler right there thinking 6 a.m., this is bad news.
Oh, yeah.
You talked about sleeping in cemeteries.
Yeah, cemeteries are peaceful.
I think the greatest thing must be just sleeping on a mountaintop, literally on a mountaintop.
Absolutely. You know, you wake up and you see the mist swirling, you see the sunrise, you see the cascade of mountains just going on and on and on. You see the ocean far below sometimes. It's a beautiful experience, especially when you got there at night and you didn't know what your surroundings were going to look like. And then, you know, you wake up and it's...
That's sort of theatrical tour guiding, is to arrive after dark so you don't know what is going to confront you in the morning.
Right.
Whoa. And then you're thankful you're not in a hotel. You're a road pilgrim.
Yeah, precisely. Precisely.
I'm Rick Steves. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking with Dan Austin about road trip pilgrims. And he's written a couple of just fascinating books. True Fans is his story about biking across the United States. And Road Trip Pilgrim's Guide is exactly that. Dan, this is so fascinating how you accidentally stumbled onto this opportunity to see what bikes can do to kids in a small village. Tell us about that foundation.
So 88 Bikes endows ashrams, villages, centers, schools throughout the developing world with bikes for all of the kids. Each kid gets a bike. They're sponsored one-to-one by donors. So one person sponsors one bike to one child. We give the child a picture of their donor in addition to their bike so that they've got this little connection with somebody across the world. And on the back of those pictures is a world map. So we can show the child in, say, Mozambique or Cambodia or Vietnam, you know, that Rick Steves lives here in Edmonds, mm-hmm. Washington, and they love that connection.
For the people who are kind of cynical or questionable about how the money's used and so on, how does that $88 actually get spent?
Well, the $88 is about what it costs to buy a bike in the developing world. Sometimes it's a little less, sometimes it's a little more. If it's a little less, it goes in the endowment fund and helps support our volunteer programs.
But you buy the bikes locally over there to keep the money in that area?
Yes, yeah. We don't ship anything in. None of us take salaries. We don't have an office. We don't spend a penny on advertising. It's all word of mouth.
And the website is great, 88bikes.org. And why the focus on girls?
Well, it's a new project we just launched. You know, we've done this for 5 years now, 88 Bikes, and we've done projects in 12, 13 countries, including the Navajo Nation here in the United States. And we found that while kids around the world love bikes, that girls especially in these locations, that they have unique challenges, and we wanted to really encourage them and help them. And we also found the girls at that level are usually a little more mature and are able to embrace the bike, to use it.
Gives them a little more confidence in a male-dominated world.
It does. And, you know, we endowed an ashram in Bihar, India, which is the poorest, most dangerous state in India, as you well know. And all the girls there are rescued from sexual slavery, and they told us that the bike helped them feel equal to men.
Yeah.
And when we heard that, I think we knew that we wanted to shift our focus and really do that for a while. So that's our new project, Project Asha.
So you've got programs in East Africa, East Europe, Latin America, in the United States, and in Southeast Asia. Personalize it for a moment. Tell me just one story when you delivered a bike and you realized this is worth the trouble.
When we were in Uganda in a refugee camp, I remember there was one boy there who, like a lot of kids in the region, had lost both of his parents to the fighting with the LRA. And, you know, he was both the father and the big brother then to his younger siblings. And when he got the bike, you know, he wasn't jumping up and down and giddy like the kids in Cambodia, but there was this sense of just, you know, you could tell this bike meant so much to him. And when he put his hands on the handlebars of that bike, you know, he never even looked at us. My brother and I were there, and we're like, wow. You know, you could tell this was just a huge day for him, because now suddenly he had a means of not only having fun, but being able to support his family.
You know, a lot of Americans are loving and compassionate people, but they're not very good at understanding the gap between rich and poor. And when you see what an $88 piece of gear can bring a kid in a scary world, that's pretty rewarding.
Yeah, it's pretty remarkable. I mean, it's, you know, it's a fair sum of money. Obviously, it's $88, but at the same time, in the grand scheme of things, it's a very small sum of money.
It's a nice dinner out, or it's a new life for a kid.
It's a new life for a kid
in Uganda, or something like that. I'm Rick Steves. We've been talking with Dan Austin. His book, Road Trip Pilgrim's Guide, gives us what we need to know to not shower for 2 weeks and have a life-changing experience. And his website, 88bikes.org, explains how we can all change the world one bicycle at a time. Dan, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Yes, have lots of fun on your bikes. Bye-bye.
Bye. Goodbye.
When I was a child, I could see the wind in the trees, and I heard a song in the breeze. It was there singing my name.
Travel with Rick Steves is produced by Tim Tatton with Sarah McCormick at Europe Through the Back Door in Edmonds, Washington. You'll find links to our guests and audio archives of each week's show in the radio section of ricksteves.com. And we'll look for you again next week for more Travel with Rick Steves.
Travel with Rick Steves is made possible in part by the European Union delegation to the USA. The European Union received the 2012 Nobel Peace Prize for promoting peace, human rights, and democracy. Information available at euintheus.org.